Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's program. I'm Marcus Peter. In the effort of us navigating the culture, we have to continue to take a good look at the entire world, including our nation, through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church. This was the driving force of all of early Christianity, and everyone who takes the gospel message seriously understands this. In fact, a lot of the people I've been blessed to encounter in my life, whom I've either learned from or whom I've journeyed with or continue to journey with, all emphasize the necessity of adopting what's known as a biblical worldview. Now, let's talk about what that means. Having a biblical worldview means looking at everything through the lens of the revelation of the Son of God, Jesus Christ. Now, when you consider that, we're going to be talking in this hour, firstly, with John Fonte about the reality of conservatism in the United States of America and what that looks like. We have to carefully take to consideration the preservation of the virtues and morality that form the foundational bedrock of our Constitution and therefore this very nation itself. This is the intent of the fathers, that even if you don't profess a faith in Christ Jesus our Lord, the moral framework, the structure of natural law that comes from the Judeo-Christian heritage is an inherent law that governs the operations of society in this free and virtuous nation. And to do away with it is to do away with all that is true, good, and beautiful about the preservation of human dignity and their flourishing in America. So this hour, we will talk firstly with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who is a friend of the program, about news and insights in today's world pertaining to the Church. And then we talk with Dr. Monica Miller about the National Day of Remembrance for the life of the unborn, particularly babies who've been slaughtered in abortion, and what you and I can do, because this is about faith in action. This is about life application. So what you and I can do in our Catholic lives, in our small spheres, to participate in the National Day of Remembrance. And then we talk about our Constitution. We talk about what being conservative truly means as a response to the hyper-liberal left ideologies, especially woke ideology, that's permeating our public sphere. So all this and more later. For now, the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, July 25th. It's the Feast of St. James the Greater. Today's news brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. President Biden held a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as the administration pushes for a ceasefire in Gaza. The two leaders held a bilateral meeting in the Oval Office before meeting with families of the American hostages still being held by Hamas. Former President Obama is planning to endorse Vice President Harris soon.
According to NBC News, the pair have had multiple discussions since she announced her candidacy on Sunday, with Obama fully supporting Harris privately. Obama remains one of the few prominent Democrats who has yet to endorse Harris. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Oklahoma is releasing guidelines on how public schools should add the Bible to their lesson plans. The guidelines from State Superintendent Ryan Walters calls for schools to provide a copy of the Bible as a resource in every classroom. He's saying earlier this week that state schools will refocus our kids' education so they know the value of the Bible. The U.S. House of Representatives is setting up a bipartisan task force to investigate the Trump assassination attempt. House Speaker Mike Johnson and Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries said this week that the task force will move quickly to find the facts and make sure such failures never happen again. NORAD says fighter jets were scrambled yesterday to intercept two Russian bombers and two Chinese bombers off the Alaskan coast. In a statement, NORAD said the Russian and PRC aircraft remained in international airspace. It went on to say the activity was not seen as a threat. And California Governor Gavin Newsom expected to sign an executive order on Thursday allowing the dismantling of homeless encampments throughout the state. Newsom instructed law enforcement to begin the process with urgency and dignity. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest for this segment is Dr. Matthew Bunsen, a friend of the program, friend of Ave Maria Radio, and he is the Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. He's also author of more than 50 books. He's an historian, professor, editor, and Roman Catholic theologian. And Matthew joins us weekly to talk about news and current events in light of the faith and in light of events in the church. Matthew, great to have you in the program again. How was your trip?
It was splendid as always. Oh, it was just spectacular, as one can imagine.
I can only imagine. So let's talk about what's going on with the Legionaries of Christ, the founder. Vatican documents are proving that was almost removed from the priesthood in the 1950s. So there's precedence for a lot of the things that happened after.
Yeah, that's right. So part of the exploration of the Vatican archives and hat tip to the Associated Press that actually was the one who forwarded this story. Father Maciel, the now infamous founder of the Legionaries of Christ, who died in 2008, it turns out was under investigation long before the 2006 investigation that actually ended with his removal by Pope Benedict XVI. This goes all the way back into the 1940s. He was investigated in the 1950s, and what's striking about this is that we've consistently seen claims that there are going to be a lot of revelations about church failure and other things as these archives are being opened up further. And yet what we're consistently finding is that the legacy, especially of Pope Pius XII, continues to be vindicated.
Right.
We know, for example, in this case, that under Pius XII, Maciel was temporarily removed as head of the Legionaries, but eventually regained control, and that happened not long after the death of Pius XII. So he was somebody who was able to cultivate many allies in the church, in much the same way that Theodore McCarrick did, the former cardinal. And here we have a demonstration of how he was able to survive for as long as he did.
And you're completely right, Matthew, in highlighting the fact that as this story continues to break, we're going to see the breakdown, if you will, of certain administrative processes in ecclesiastical hierarchy, especially with the fact that just like McCarrick, Maciel was masterful at cultivating those friendships in particular places that enabled him to continue holding the positions that he did and living the life of luxury that he did while constantly putting forth denial of any wrongdoing and not being investigated for them.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the opening of the archives, especially from 2020, focusing specifically on Pius XII, again, you had these expectations, or the story was, and many in the secular press, that this is going to be revealing scandalous failures on the part of the church. And in fact, the more that we have seen, the more it's clear that the record of Pius XII is defensible. It is everything that we have claimed it to be. But it's also interesting that the AP story notes that in 2012, Mexican victims of Maciel, and there were many, published about 200 leaked Vatican documents in a book called The Will Not to Know. And the Legionnaires themselves, in responding to the AP story, mentioned that many of these revelations were known before. So this isn't necessarily something that's shocking, but again, it's a question of what was happening within the church at the time.
Yep. And I mean, you think about it, we have allegations, and some of them have proven credible, of the abuse of at least 60 minors, and all of them anywhere from 11 to 16, but also the several women that he had relations with, and the children that he fathered illegitimately while running as head of the Congregation of the Legionaries of Christ.
That's right, yeah, and these are historical records now. We know that he had protection from very high-ranking people, but we also know that when Benedict XVI came into his own as his pope, Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, he moved very swiftly against Maciel. And so the progress that we've made in the church is significant, especially in light of the subsequent efforts to fight abuse that we saw under Benedict and then under Pope Francis.
Mm-hmm. And thankfully, even as we find the defensibility and even the vindication of the reputation of Pius XII, we're also seeing that when the evidence for the wrongdoing is brought to light, the popes in authority, the sitting popes at the time, act upon that information with credibility and are very just in the decisions that they make.
Yeah. Now, the question can be asked, what happened in the period after Pius XII's passing? What happened with Maciel? Well, we know from the historical record, again, that he was able to cultivate a lot of friends.
Yes.
And I think transition periods, especially as they were, here was the launch of a new pontificate, and then we were being ushered very swiftly into the era of the council. I'm not saying that the Pope St. John the 23rd failed in this, but I think what happened, as it often does, is that from one pontificate to another, positions change, new people are put in charge, and things get overlooked.
Right, right. And we know full well, not just in the fact that with the transition of papacies that things were overlooked, we also know that, as you mentioned, he cultivated friendships and confidences in the right places, even to the fact of having the trust of John Paul II throughout his papacy.
Mm-hmm. That's right. In a similar way, we've had the news just this week that the Knights of Columbus have made the decision and did actually
yep.
cover over the art of Marco Rupnik
yep.
At the John Paul II Shrine. I make that connection because that the case of Father Marco Rupnik, the former Jesuit who just refresh everybody's memory, is now under investigation by the Vatican into multiple sexual abuse allegations on the part of adults, but the big question surrounding him is what to do with his mosaics
yep.
that are found literally all over the world. You and I have talked about this. So the Knights of Columbus made the decision to cover over with cloth or paper at the shrine the mosaics, pending what happens to this investigation. Now, it's worth pointing out that this investigation has been very long.
Yeah.
It has been also at times very controversial because of some of the delays and some of the failures, I think, in pushing forward some aspects of what needs to be done.
Yep. And just like you and I talked about the last time, too, at the lowest level, this is a rather prudent decision in the meantime, while those conversations that you just mentioned have to happen, which is, what do we do? Do we just destroy all of his art that's unfortunately on display across the world and even in publications? Pulling down Rupnik's influence globally is going to be a gargantuan effort.
Yes, yeah, and I think we're seeing in this case, pending again a pronouncement from the Holy See, and that in some ways connects this to Maciel. Once the investigation started, it moved very quickly under Benedict. This one has taken some time. And I think the Knights then very prudently made the decision, and the Supreme Knight Patrick Kelly making the key point that the victims have to be foremost in our thoughts. And as he pointed out, that the victims may be further injured by the ongoing displays of the mosaics
yeah.
shrine, pending, again, an investigation and the conclusion of this judicial process on the part of the Holy See. But for now, it makes sense for them to cover over these mosaics. But this is one decision by a very significant organization in the church. We'll have to see, given the fact that there are 200-plus locations where Rupnik's art is,
yes.
is festooned across whole parts of churches, basilicas, shrines, and elsewhere.
Festooned is right.
And as we saw in Lourdes, that has been the source of a lot of discernment, and
yeah.
I think that discernment's going to have to continue.
Yeah. And in at least heartfelt news or heartwarming news, the cult and veneration of St. Charbel Maklouf is continuing well and strong in Lebanon. My guest has been Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who is Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. For Ave Maria in the Afternoon, I'm Marcus Peter.
underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
The history books tell of many times and places in which the Zeitgeist, the spirit of the time, decided that for the good of the state, some element of its population should be killed, like the Irish or African slaves or Jews or priests. While the Christian tradition maintains that human life is sacred, don't assume that the world agrees. Accordingly, many of the mothers, fathers, and grandparents bringing an unborn child to the abortuary know that they are killing a human being, yet have no problem with it, because history has taught them that human life is not sacred, and that occasionally certain members of society have to be sacrificed. Therefore, the pro-life movement cannot argue simply that human life is sacred. It must argue why it is sacred. The pro-life movement should show the world that as the person struggles with loneliness, runs from death, seeks answers, seeks beauty, the person is showing that he belongs to God. GuadalupeWorkers.org.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We're talking with Dr. Monica Miller today about the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children. And her organization, Citizens for Pro-Life Society, is one that drives forward the need to start thinking about this event long before the event itself. And she's a nationally known pro-life leader, prolific author. And in particular, right now, she is the director of Citizens for Pro-Life Society. And she's been at the forefront of not only being a voice for the voiceless in terms of unborn children, she's also been at the forefront in terms of legal cases and advocacy for the entire pro-life movement. Monica, it's great to talk to you again. How are you doing?
I'm so glad to be with you, Marcus. Thank you.
So, this year, we're celebrating the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children on September the 14th, and you're already beginning the campaign for not only support in terms of numbers, but also in the efforts of organizing. So tell us, what are some of the grassroots movements that you're kickstarting?
Well, the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Babies is a national event. It is co-sponsored between myself, Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, and also Eric Scheidler with the Pro-Life Action League. So it is our annual project together. It almost always, unless there's a reason to move it, is on the second Saturday of September. Mm-hmm. And so this year, the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Babies is September 14th. What we need right now, so everybody listening to our talk today, we need leaders.
Right.
We need people to step forward and to organize and plan a service for these aborted babies. And so there are approximately 50 actual grave sites all over, sad to say, the American landscape. And so we need leaders to step forward and say, yeah, I'll plan a service for one of those actual graves, mm-hmm, where aborted babies are buried. And then there are literally hundreds of memorial markers for aborted babies. A lot of them are at churches, both Catholic and Protestant churches, Catholic parishes, and also in some schools actually have a marker, like Holy Apostles, for example, in Connecticut. And of course, cemeteries. Some cemeteries have markers. And listen, this is so easy. If you go to a National Day of Remembrance, so all one word, right? Mm-hmm. National Day of Remembrance. So hopefully people are writing this down.
it'll be in the program description as well.
You click on locations. And it's so beautifully organized. Mm. So a map will come up and then also a list alphabetized by state. So you scroll down to your state and you click on it. And voila, if there's grave sites in your state, they will be there with the address. And also then after the grave sites will be all of the memorial markers that we've been able to identify thus far. So, and then you can click on host a memorial. And we have lots of fantastic resources for doing this, how to do it, you know, getting out your flyers, putting your stuff up on, you know, getting stuff out on email lists, taking out radio ads, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, and it just, this doesn't have to be complicated. Even if you just got, you know, a bunch of friends and your family to gather at one of these grave sites or one of the memorial markers and offer prayers, you know, Bible readings, singing hymns or whatever. Here's the thing, guys. Aborted babies are abandoned, unwanted people.
Yep.
And this is the way for us to honor them, to remember them. Our group, Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, with the Pro-Life Action League, back in 1987 and 1988, we literally retrieved thousands of bodies of aborted babies from abortion center trash dumpsters. I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
And the loading dock of the Vital Med Pathology Lab in Northbrook, Illinois, where boxes and boxes of dead bodies of aborted babies were set out on the loading dock, marked with, you know, magic marker for disposal. So they were going to be incinerated with medical waste and trash and so on. So, I have, by the way, all of this is chronicled in my book,
yep.
Abandoned, the untold story of the abortion wars, from Tan Books. So if you just go to Tan Books on the internet and you put in the search box abandoned, my book will come up. So this is our way of honoring them and remembering them and drawing attention to what is a Holocaust. Under Roe v. Wade, over 60 million unborn children were exterminated. And the number keeps growing because abortion is not over.
Yeah.
Even in the post, you know, Dobbs situation that we're in.
Yeah.
The unborn are dying over 1,000 a day.
Yep.
So, and we need to draw attention to this horrific, atrocious injustice. And it's, you know, when you think about it, there are actual graves where these victims are buried. And maybe just a little story about that.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, in 1988, when we were doing the retrievals of these aborted babies from that loading dock, we had an idea, and I do talk about this in my book. You know, my good friend John Kavanaugh O'Keefe out there in Virginia also had retrieved bodies from an abortion center dumpster in Washington, D.C., and he thought was, you know, every aborted baby should have his or her own funeral individually.
Yeah,
right?
Yep, absolutely.
to mark the unique personhood of that particular aborted child. But of course, you know, if we were going to have individual funerals for every single aborted baby that we retrieved, especially in 1988, we had 5,000. Approximately 5,000 bodies. I would still be burying them right now.
Yep. Okay, so.
So we kind of did a compromise. The compromise was that when we could, we actually gave the bodies of aborted babies back to the pro-lifers in the communities where those aborted babies were killed. Now, how could we do that? Because, and again, it's chronicled in my book, the boxes that were on the loading dock at VitalMed, that pathology lab, actually had the return labels. They were shipped on parcel post from all over the country to that loading dock at VitalMed, and the return labels were on the boxes. So we knew exactly where these aborted babies were killed. Raleigh, North Carolina, Wilmington, Delaware, Fairfield, New Jersey, Chicago, Milwaukee, North Dakota, Fargo, North Dakota, and so on. Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Monica, so
the
music
back.
So the music has hit, but again, that's nationaldayofremembrance.org, and you can find out not only about Monica's work, but how you can get involved, and that link is going to be on the description of today's episode. My guest has been Dr. Monica Miller, Director of Citizens for Pro-Life Society and nationally known pro-life leader. For Avi Maria in the Afternoon, I'm Marcus Peter.
In a world shrouded in confusion, the good news of Jesus Christ is the only light that conquers the darkness. Join Ave Maria Radio at the Good News Conference and renew your faith. August 30th through September 1st in Minneapolis, speakers include Bishop Robert Barron, Monsignor James Shea, and Father Mike Schmitz. The response has been tremendous, and we have limited spots left. Go to AveMariaRadio.net's travel page and sign up now. Let's build our faith and be a blessing to the nations.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, weekdays on Ave Maria Radio.
When you have doubts about what the church does or what the church says, we're talking about the teachings of the church. Take a look at what the church is actually teaching. Before jumping to a conclusion, worship again is for God alone. Mary and the saints are venerated. We ask for their intercession. Just as we ask for our brothers and sisters here on earth to pray for us. If you're at a prayer meeting, pray for this. Pray for this person. Whatever. Intercession. And for those who doubt intercession of the saints, don't we believe that the saints are more alive because they are in heaven, closer to Christ, right? And nowhere in Scripture does it say that the saints are dead. Always take the time, take a breath, ask God to show you why the church teaches what she teaches, and do some homework.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, weekday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net.
Can a church made up of sinners still be holy? St. Teresa, the Little Flower, says this about the Catholic Church. If the church was a body composed of different members, it could not lack the noblest of all. It must have a heart, and a heart burning with love. And I realized that this love alone was the true motive force which ennobled the other members of the church to act. If it ceased to function, the apostles would forget to preach the gospel. The martyrs would refuse to shed their blood. Love, in fact, is the vocation which includes all others. It is a universe of its own, comprising all time and space. It is eternal. The Catholic Catechism tells us that our divine Lord, who knew nothing of sin, came only to expiate sin. So the Church embraces sinners in order to save them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. In the past 2 years, two competing groups of conservatives, national conservatives and freedom conservatives, have developed issues of competing manifestos. And these manifestos reflect a divergent understanding of the challenge that is progressiveness in the American way of life. To talk with me about this is John Fonte, Senior Fellow and Director of the Center for American Common Culture at the Hudson Institute, and his writings have been published in the U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, Israel, and Latin America. And he's appeared on multiple news agencies to talk about various issues pertaining to politics. John, it's great to have you on the program. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing fine.
So I'd like to just ask that we open the conversation by means of definition. Now, when we say conservative, we mean the particular group of individuals within a society that are seeking to uphold certain virtuous moral ideals, ideals of morals and virtue that are ostensibly objective. And we contrast this with those who are focused on liberty. But you make an added distinction here of national conservatives and freedom conservatives. So let's define that.
We say the last couple years there's been this discussion of what is American conservatism. And the basis, really, the beginning of modern American conservatism in the 20th century came in the 1950s with the group around National Review. This was William Buckley's circle around National Review, and
right.
Sort of culminated in the election of Ronald Reagan. So let's say I call this first wave conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say this went from the mid-1950s until the fall of the Berlin Wall, the end of communism, the end of the Reagan era, 1989. And this conservatism was, as the things you just mentioned, based on morality, virtue, and also a defense of America and then the American nation state, and a attempt to throw back liberalism at home and communism abroad. The beginning was atheistic communism,
right.
Referred to as atheistic communism in those days. Now, the second wave conservatism was after the fall of the Berlin Wall. This was the period of the two Bush presidencies and sort of Paul Ryan as speaker. And here we had more of a global approach, both at home and abroad. It was mass immigration at home, increased immigration, talks about also about a global economy and a uniting of sort of North America, an economic integration. This was discussed. And abroad, there was the idea of spreading democracy throughout the world. So this was the period, let's say, from the fall of the Berlin Wall until, say, the Tea Party movement, maybe in the 2010s and 2012s. At that point, there was sort of a grassroots revolt and somewhat of an intellectual revolt against what I'm calling second-wave conservatism, that Bush period.
Right.
And this was a wave, let's return more to a focus on the nation, national interest, on immigration. Let's be sure people are assimilated into the American way of life. There's sort of a patriotic assimilation abroad. Instead of looking so much for global democracy, let's look more at American interests. And there were some competing documents, too, that refers to. They're very important to take a look at. The Sharon Statement was the first wave document that took place at Sharon, Connecticut, at the Buckley's Ranch. And this called for an emphasis on opposition to atheistic communism, emphasis on God, on morality, on virtue. The Freecon Statement, which is the second wave, Bush-Ryan period I'm talking about, which exists now, but this group only talked about basically about economics, freedom, free economics, very little, no references to God, no references to virtue, and so on. Now, the third wave, this national conservatism, or sometimes called the New Right today, that's the period of Trump, and before Trump, the whole opposition to immigration and the whole sort of Tea Party movement. And this, in the NatCon statement, in the National Conservative Statement, there was reference to, again, to God, to virtue, to the nation, to Scripture, actually. And how do we build a nation? How is this strengthened? So there was an affinity then between the third wave, the national conservatism, and the very first wave, that Buckley period,
right?
The Buckley-Reagan period, which differs from the second wave. So that's a rather long-winded, but that's the core of the argument I'm making in this essay.
Right. So let's dive deeper into this notion of conservatism and the definition of virtue. The fact of the matter is Frank Meyer's name is going to come up when you talk about the National Review and fusionism. And we can all admit that there are master issues with fusionism as a philosophy. But one thing that was highlighted in the thrust was that virtue became the driving force of the nation. Liberty, and those wanting to preserve liberty, did so understanding that a moral system of virtue undergirded the nation. And the common enemy during the first wave of conservatism was anti-communism. We're no longer seeing that. So without a common enemy, are we still united under the grounds of an objective morality that undergirds society and conservatism?
Well, I guess the common enemy at this point is what's been called wokeism, the whole idea of transforming the United States, of transforming morality, this assault on all traditional institutions and traditional mores. The
right.
Idea that women, you know, men can become women, ideas unheard of or even thought of 20 years ago. This is a more difficult enemy in a sense to get a hold of, but it's clearly there, and it's gone under different names. Originally it was sort of called, well, it was multiculturalism. That's what it was leading toward, political correctness, identity politics. It's had all these names, but I think the wokeism, or woke, you could call it progressivism, or they call themselves social justice people,
right?
You know, social justice warriors, all these terms, they all mean the same thing. It's all the transformation of the United States of America, and a repudiation, a rejection of historic America, and a rejection of historic Christianity, of Judaism, a rejection of historic Western civilization, of, you might say, Christian civilization. And this is worldwide. You see what's happening
That's
in
right.
Europe with the European Union. The elites, the progressive elites in Europe are trying to stamp this out. When there was a discussion of what is Europe, there was no little discussion of Christianity when this was originally discussed about 10 years ago, when they were forming the intellectual basis, the moral basis for the European Union.
Yep.
So this is throughout the West, though here in America we have this particular struggle, and we had a former president of the United saying, former president of the United saying that right before his election, we're only a few days away from the fundamental transformation of the United States of America. So if the country has to be fundamentally transformed, that means there's something wrong with it.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So, yes, there was something wrong. It was too Christian, too white, too male, too patriotic, too heterosexual. It was all these things, and still is. So that's where we're headed today. That's actually at the core of this election today, for that matter, the current election we're going to have in a couple of months. It's not simply about economics, but it's about all these things. It's about the continuation of historic America or its replacement.
That's right.
And that's what third wave conservatism is, this national conservatism, is an attempt to strengthen the nation, to strengthen Western civilization, to maybe come up with a new fusionism that unites us behind against the woke revolution, which really is a revolution in politics, but in culture,
yep,
in manners, in morals, yep, and religion,
and against
it's
reality,
like the French Revolution, in a sense.
Yep, and one good thing that one would hope for in the attempt of this new fusionism is a return to constitutional principles and the ideals of the founders, which we're seeing that the entire NatCon movement tends to tout, you know, that traditional beliefs, institutions, liberties, honor and loyalty, religion and wisdom, these are things that are coming forth from that movement. And I'd love to continue this conversation, John, but we're out of time. Thank you so much. How can people reach you?
Well, you can write me at johnf@hudson.org.
Well, thank you so much, John, for making the time. My guest has been John Fonte, who is the Senior Fellow and Director of the Center of American Common Culture at Hudson Institute, and we've been talking about the waves of conservatism and what that looks like in the American sphere today. Stay tuned for Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. We know personally that when a loved one passes suddenly, we are relieved that a will was already in place. At MyCatholicWill.com, a legal will is as simple as 15 minutes filling out information about your family. Thanks to our partnership with MyCatholicWill.com, when you use the promo code AVE, A-V-E, your will is absolutely free. No hidden costs whatsoever. Visit MyCatholicWill.com.
Before you dig in Michigan or put a shovel in the ground, you gotta call Miss Dig
811.
They'll have the pros look around. Before you dig that garden in the sun, keep yourself safe, dial 811. It's a law that keeps you safe and your project sound from all of the dangers that are hidden underground. Keep your digging in Michigan safe and fun. Call Miss Dig 811. Keep digging in Michigan safe and fun. Call Miss Dig 811.
Sponsored by Miss Dig 811 and the MAB.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck.
Jesus said, you're the light of the world. And one of the things that he meant by that was the Christian people understand the larger story that's unfolding in history. So as St. Paul said, as the saints echoed very clearly, we're now living through just a short moment, a slight momentary affliction, he calls it, in this life, which is going to make way and lead us to an eternal glory beyond all compare. The secret to the fruitfulness and the strength of the apostles was that they lived with a clear vision of the future, an eternal perspective, fixed on the destiny of where their life was headed. And they lived with the realization that, wow, yeah, life is very short here. Everything is temporary. Nothing here in this world is ultimately going to last except the ultimate destinies, the eternal destinies of every human being that exists on the earth. And they knew that whether good things were coming their way or bad things from the world's perspective were coming away, nothing could steal from them, nothing could take away the gold that was in their heart, the treasure that they bore. You're a temple of the Holy Spirit.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Support for this Ave Maria Radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at stanthonyservices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Continuing the conversation on the phases of conservatism and how that impacts the American culture, my guest is John Fonte, Senior Fellow and Director of the Center for American Common Culture at the Hudson Institute. And John, we were talking earlier about how the NatCon movement, in its response to a lot of the battle cries and the words that are coming out of the far liberal left, are now in their own ways touting words like traditional belief, institutions, and liberties, but they're also saying patriotism and courage, honor and loyalty, religion and wisdom. And these seem to be an appeal to not only first-wave conservatism, but also some of the constitutional frameworks of the nation.
Yes, that's right. It's actually about the preservation of what we could call the American creed, and the American culture, the preservation of what you might call historic America, which is a combination, we can say, of two things, as Charles Kessler over at Claremont Review of Books has written. The American Creed, which would include the enduring principles of the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, government by consent of the governed, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers. So the sort of the core principles of the American founding and of the American regime, the American way of life, and sort of historic American culture, our history, our manners and mores, our lived experience, the flesh and blood nation that created one of the greatest civilizations the world has ever known. We probably one of the greatest leadership classes, if we think about the founders, that has ever existed in human history, and then has gone on from 13 small colonies huddled on the East Coast to a continent-wide constitutional democracy, constitutional republic that defeated the forces of tyranny in the 20th century, still leads the world. So both of those things, and the American creed and the American culture, are essential to the promotion, the maintenance, the transfer, the strengthening, you could say, the transmission of American civilization to future generations of America. So all of these things play, and this is at the heart, I think, of third-wave conservatism, I'm calling national conservatism, sometimes called the New Right. So I think that's what the issue is today, whether this, and this is now the major force within one of the major political parties in the United States. This third wave conservatism is now dominant, as we could see from the primaries, with those candidates coming on, those candidates being strong, and with what's being proposed, both in the National Conservative Statement of Principles, which you might say is the theory, and then what's actually happened in practice, what state governments are doing to defend traditional Americanism from diversity, equity, inclusion, from CRT, and all of these things. So that's both the theoretical level and the practical level, and that's what's happening today.
Given the overt media and cultural criticism, if you will, of the NatCon movement as if it's an extreme far-right conservatism, in the face of that, one could understand, however, that the NatCon movement is a necessary response to what has dominated the far-left progressive movement, especially since we can admit that progressive liberal leftist ideologies have achieved dominance in universities, in education, especially public education, but also in legacy media, in corporations and institutions, in our entertainment, in technology. So in the face of this, the NatCon response is not only a natural response, it's also a proper response for a proper check and balance.
Yes, what you're saying, of course, is the conquest of the institutions by the left, by the woke progressive, that's usually the term I use, that was revolutionary.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea we don't know what a woman is revolutionary. The idea of the United States is an oppressor nation is built on slavery and structural racism and so on is revolutionary. And this revolution, it's like the French Revolution in a sense, this Jacobin Revolution, has succeeded in taking over all these major institutions, as you noted, universities, K-12 education, corporations, media, entertainment industry, and so on. They've taken all these over all these groups. So the NAFCON movement, or the new right of today, is a response to this revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a form of counter-revolution in that sense. It's a revolution against the revolution, a counter-revolution. In no sense is this far right. This is the views of most normal Americans. And it's the views of Americans, let's say, both Republicans and Democrats, not that long ago, people that voted for both Reagan and Mondale, people that voted for George W. Bush and Gore.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of normal. People sort of knew what a man and a woman were a very short time ago. They knew that men shouldn't be playing in women's sports.
Yeah.
This was not controversial. This is not far right. This is normal American. That's why the term I use is Americanist.
Mm-hmm.
This is simply an Americanist position. It's not even a conservative position. In that sense, you've got a lot of recent liberals like, say, Barry Weiss. He used to be people with the New York Times, have left and have denounced more or less the woke progressive revolution and their attempt to silence opponents and all of these un-American things. So Americanist movement in that sense would include both national conservatives, some of these people that call themselves freedom conservatives, and even some patriotic liberals. So it's that's the issue we're facing today.
Yeah.
Is America good or is America bad? It's rather basic. Is this basically a positive civilization or is it negative?
Yeah.
That's the argument today. It's over America.
Yeah.
So it's Americanist versus these transformationists. You want to use, that's a neutral term. You can
mm-hmm.
use woke, you can use progressive, you can use left liberal, you could use any of these terms. It's all the same thing, but it's all about delegitimizing and transforming America and transforming the West. Delegitimizing Christianity, traditional Judaism, traditional religion in general,
mm-hmm.
traditional civilization in general.
Yep, yep.
So it's really a civilizational conflict that we're in today. It's within the civilization,
yep.
within Western civilization itself.
And it's very clear that for these transformationists, the embracing of things like woke ideology is a revolt against, objective reality itself. And if they were to be allowed to go down this path, it's not just about transforming the nation to quote-unquote be better. It's really about ultimately destroying the very heritages that have created what's great about Western civilization and America.
Yes. Well, in fact, they don't like the concept of nation. You're not going to be an American citizen. You're a global citizen. And they look forward to the day when the nation says, Strobe Talbot wrote in Time magazine about 20 years ago, and later he worked for Bill Clinton. He said he looked forward to the day when the American nation would submit to a higher authority, a global authority, not a materialist. Global authority, the Davos crowd, the globalists who would succeed the American nation and all other nations. So sort of a Tower of Babel, where this would be the ultimate rule here on Earth, is a form of empire, an evil empire in a sense, a transnational progressive empire that would mm-hmm. stamp out the nation state, freedom, a religion, virtue, morality, in the name of these new gods.
Well, thank you so much, John, for all of that. That this is interesting, and it's necessary for the entire nation to get to terms with the fact that the national conservatism that we are seeing in the public sphere right now is a necessary response to all that we are seeing from the far liberal left, especially in terms of the destruction of those very ideals that form the heart of this nation, especially the principles of subsidiarity and the principle of the common good and the upholding of the dignity of the human person. The fact is that the United States of America is formed under these ideals for this reason, that it brings about the true flourishing of communities and societies and families that builds together a strong nation. I want to thank you for joining us in this hour
of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. We've had some truly intriguing conversations. And as we move forward from this, a lot of our information that we're talking about on this program is not just about navigating the culture, but it's also about engaging the socio-political situation that we're seeing right now, particularly because we are gearing up towards an election at the end of this year. And when we do so, we ought to approach it with a heart that is ready to take good Catholic stewardship of the right to vote. It is frivolous to think that as a Catholic we ought to identify with any one political party, but what we ought to identify with are the very same morals and virtues and ideals that are perennial about Judeo-Christianity. And the person we vote for, or the people we vote for, ought to be appealing to these objective ideals, because regardless of whatever transformationist ideals might plague the public sphere, what we are going to wind up seeing is that these things will remain. The truths of the gospel, the truths of morality that have been revealed to us, but also the fundamental principles of natural law and the common dignity of the human person that forms the bedrock and framework of the entirety of Western civilization. Any movement that seeks to break the boundaries of borders, any movement that seeks to push for a one nation globalist ideology where we are all one together singing kumbaya with our hands held in this proverbial utopia is a lie. And everywhere that we have seen this lie put forth, it has resulted in nothing but the subjugation of the rights of the individual in the interest of the state. Ultimately, it will be people, human beings, who will suffer. So let's fight. Let's pray. Let's hope. And let's put God at the center of our nation once again. Thank you so much for joining us on Ave Maria in the Afternoon. Until tomorrow, I'm Marcus Peter.